We know hunting for good coffee can be frustrating and time-consuming. And with all the confusing labels out there, it's hard to know that what you are buying is actually mindfully sourced and truly making a difference in people's lives. That's why we put together our Perpetual Joy coffee subscription. Over the last 15 years, Joe Bean Coffee has built friendships with award-winning coffee farmers, ones we trust to consistently bring us amazing coffee year after year. Coffee tastes best at the peak of harvest, which is why we run our program like a CSA, regularly sending you a rotating selection of in-season coffee. You pick how many bags and how often you need it. We do the rest. And you can feel good knowing you're directly supporting small-scale coffee farmers. Go to JoeBeanRoasters.com for details.
I'll tell you a secret about men. I don't know if I've ever really, truly matured beyond about 14 years old. Like the things I wanted to do when I was 14, I just want to stay up all night playing video games, eating pizza, and like drinking Mountain Dew. I kind of still want to do that at 42.
I feel like a lot of millennials are healing their trauma by doing what they wanted to do at 14. So yeah. Go for it.
Yeah. Hello, and welcome to It's a Lot, a podcast about things that are a lot. On this show, we have honest conversations about the highs and lows of social media, parenthood, and more. When it comes to complex topics, online discourse can lack nuance and empathy. That's why we're leaning into deep conversations, making space for conflicting, messy feelings, and keeping it real about how we feel. We could all use a little more of that sometimes. I'm your host, Emily Hesney Lynch, and today I'm excited to share an interview with Pauly Guglielmo. Pauly's a bit of a Rochester legend. He's a radio guy turned podcaster, he runs his own sauce company called Guglielmo Sauce, and he's the owner of a factory called Craft Cannery. He's also a father of two. You can follow Pauly on Instagram at Googs, G-O-O-G-S, 0105, and I'll link to his businesses in the show notes as well. This is a special two-part crossover episode. Pauly interviewed me for his show, The Pauly Guglielmo Show, and I interviewed him for It's a Lot. You should see both of them in your feed, so make sure to check out his interview with me if you're curious for more about how I started my business, Serve Me the Sky Digital, my path to becoming an adjunct professor at Nazareth University, and how I balance all of that with being a mom. Like, I actually balance it. We also talk about tattoos, childhood trauma, and more, so make sure to listen to both. Just a quick content warning before you dive into today's episode. Pauly and I do talk at length about his and his wife's experience with infertility, miscarriage, and IVF. If those are sensitive topics for you, please take care while listening. And if you want to skip past that part, it starts around the 27-minute mark and should wrap up around 39 minutes. I really loved my conversation with Pauly. He's very funny, genuine, and vulnerable, and I hope you enjoy listening and that it makes you feel a little less alone. Without further ado, here's our conversation.
I'm curious, like, with your journey from radio to podcasting, what is it about audio that you love so much and wanted to, like, keep going with a weekly podcast?
So I always loved radio. I just didn't like the company. So when I left radio, it was very, like, it split me emotionally right down the middle so much. I loved what I was going into. I love this world and I love entrepreneurship, but God, like my first love was radio. The specifically the audio medium, I think it came from like my grandfather would sit and listen to the radio in the morning. If I went to his house, he was listening to the radio. He watched TV a little bit, but he was like a big radio guy. And my grandfather would call in the local radio station. And I would later find out that a very small percentage of people will actually pick up a phone and call a radio station. My grandpa was the guy who would. And then so was my dad, because his dad did. And so my dad would listen to the radio, and then he would have me with some hot take on like the Cleveland Indians, like go in the other room and like read a statement that he had written because he just wanted. So I would call radio stations when I was like 12 years old on behalf of my father to talk about how like Jose Mesa was the best closer in baseball. And I was so freaking fascinated by the delay that I could run in the living room and hear like the last 15 seconds of my voice. And that was my voice on the radio. And like, that was just so cool. So it was just, I was enamored by it. It was just like, and you could connect to people. And another thing about audio that is really fascinating is like in television, if you need a pink elephant, you can just, you have to create a pink elephant. Either it's a graphic or you need to do something. But in radio, I can just say, picture a pink elephant. And you did. It's theater of the mind. Mm. The potential is limitless. You know, and then as I got better at it and I started sharing vulnerabilities, anxiety, I have all a million things have gone wrong. Like one time I am I allowed to curse on It's a Lot?
Oh, go for it.
I shit my pants at work once and shared it on the radio. And I've never lived it down. People still talk to me all the time. But you know what they say to me? They go, oh my God, I would never tell anybody, but I've done that. And so like you just connect with people. Like that was the most embarrassing thing that can happen to a human being. Mm-hmm. Nothing more embarrassing can happen to a human being than shitting your pants at work. I did it. So I can survive anything.
Yeah. Live to tell the tale.
Yeah.
That's impressive. I think audio is really special like that for those connections, especially like you said, when you're vulnerable. And it's so different than being able to see the other person. Like, I don't know what it is about imagining the voices you're listening to, but it's just a different experience.
You use your imagination. You use like more of your brain, I think, than when you're listening than when you're seeing.
So it sounds like you wouldn't want to do like the video podcast on YouTube that so many people are pivoting to these days.
Very recently, a couple of weeks ago, I had the opportunity to start doing video podcasting. Mm-hmm. And I really thought about it and I ended up saying no. Mm-hmm. Also because like I work at a factory, like I have stains on my shirt from work today. Like I can't be on camera.
I feel like people get so done up for them. Makeup done, cute outfit, cute background. Like, oh, I don't have time for that.
Even you,
and
like,
you have to control your face and stuff too. Like to look like, I feel like I would just have resting bitch face through the whole video.
Oh dude, you know what I loved about COVID? Behind the mask, I could, because my natural face, my jaw like falls. Like, I my mouth is just wide open. So like I fought my whole life to learn how to keep my mouth closed. And during COVID, I went back to just letting my jaw. So people didn't have any idea, but I'm just standing there like, as they're tough. But yeah, on TV can't get away with that.
Yeah. No. So I'm curious what it was like when you were getting ready to purchase Craft Cannery and like make it what it is. Were you like scared out of your mind? Were you like super stoked? Like what kind of feelings were going through your head?
I am still scared every single day about this place. This thing started, like this building you're sitting in started under a 10 by 10 tent at the Riesling Festival in Canandaigua with a couple of tables and a tent that I bought from Dick's Sporting Goods. And that was just to see if it would work. And it still, everything I do is still just like, well, that worked. Let's see if this next thing works. And like a lot of them haven't worked. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of failure in there, but this was one of the scariest things of my life coming here, deciding to open this place, I should say. It was just, it's risk. Like, what's the number one skill required to be an entrepreneur? Risk tolerance. You know, you were sharing about how you also like at one point made that leap. I mean, you remember how scared you were? Mm-hmm. You're going to be relying on yourself. It's crazy. I have terrible self-esteem, terrible self-confidence. Like I was bad at every sport I tried, you know? Every girl I ever asked out said no. My wife, the first time I asked her to marry me, said no.
No way.
I have dealt with rejection my whole life. So what would make me think I'd be good at anything? And I'm not, but I'm resilient.
Resilience is important.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a very harsh story you're telling yourself, that you're not good at anything, as you sit here with like your successful businesses and a marriage and two kids. Like,
you want to hear?
People probably wouldn't believe it.
You want to hear my childhood trauma real quick?
Yeah.
My mother used to tell me, she's going to kill me because she listens to this podcast, but this has come up before. My mother used to tell me I had a black cloud over my head. She used to say, she used to go, like one time she saw us all jumping off the roof into a snow pile when I was like 10 or 12 or something. And she like pulled me aside and she said, you have a black cloud over your head. Your friends can do that, but if you do that, you'll break your arm. Yeah.
Oh my God.
So, and then same thing with like one time I was with a bunch of kids and like kids were throwing balls at mailboxes. I mean, teenager crap. I'm not proud of it, but I was with teenagers and we were throwing balls at mailboxes. And the cop showed up at my house out of like 7 kids. And the cop was like, well, they said they saw the Guglielmo kid. And I remember we talked to the cop. I had to apologize. We had to buy mailboxes, et cetera, et cetera. But after that door closed, I remember my mom saying like, see, you have a black cloud over your head. Mm. So I share this story on the radio one day and Brother Weez is like, you are right now. He's like sad for me. He's like, that's terrible. So we call my mom on the air and we say, and this is what's great about radio too, is because people are like into this. People are really into this. They're like, oh, like, let's call his mother and tell him how hurtful that was to him. We call my mom. I tell her this. Weez jumps in and starts saying, Patty, honey, you look what you've done to your kid. He still thinks about this. You know what my mom did? She doubled the fuck down and said, well, he does. This is like 10 years ago.
Classic boomer parent move.
It's like, well, he does. I mean, just ask him. Like, he breaks things. He's just like, it was like.
Do you have siblings?
I have one little brother.
And yeah. He does not have the same cloud?
I don't think so. I mean, he's the baby. He kind of does get treated like the baby. I think he's loved more than I am. I don't know.
It's funny how they have like their different personalities right from birth. But like, I'm sure you weren't dark cloud boy. Like, or that's just such a... It terrible was, message to plant in your brain for the rest of your life.
It was. I remember the first time I ever stood up to my mom. I remember doing it. So I had tried out for baseball and got cut when Little League is like 9, 10, 11, and 12 year olds. So I tried out when I was 9. I got cut. I didn't make it. I tried out when I was 10. I got cut. I didn't make it. I tried out when I was 11. I got cut. I didn't make it. So you see the resilience, right? Like I just kept coming.
Just keep plowing
just
away.
Just kept coming back. Yeah. So I'm 12 now. It's my only chance I'm ever going to have to play in Little League. I hate baseball. I don't want to be there, but all my friends play and my parents pressure me and my dad's a huge baseball fan. So I feel like I have to go. So I go and this team needs a catcher. They need a catcher. And my mom didn't stay for practice. I'm a millennial, not a Gen Z. I think Gen Z's, their parents stay for practice. My mom just wants to know everything after she picks me up. So they need a catcher and I do not volunteer to be catcher because I am scared. The ball, I don't want the ball being thrown at me. I don't want the bat being swung by my head. I'm Fair. Scared shitless.
Fair.
And so I don't volunteer to be a catcher. And I tell my mom that. Because she knew they needed a catcher. And she just starts yelling at me. She's like, then you're going to get cut again. You're going to get cut. And I remember I stood up for her and I was like crying. And I was like, but mom, I don't want to play baseball. I don't want them. I'm scared. I don't like if I get the job as catcher, I'll just be scared every day. It'll be the worst time ever, you know? And like, I remember she goes, oh, okay. Yeah, actually, yeah, that makes sense.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, that worked. Holy shit.
Oh, wow. I'm glad she listened that time.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe that was a good lesson about speaking up for yourself in the end.
Yes.
Maybe.
I think so, maybe. Yeah.
We're stretching to find a silver lining.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. How did we get talking about that?
I don't know. But I was thinking about, I shared my parental leave story to pivot. Yeah. So your parental leave, what did you do when your sons were born with your entrepreneur journey? Like, how are you able to carve out time for that?
Two different stories, because the 6-year-old was born when I was still working in radio, so I was still just like a Monday through Friday worker. I did have the business going, but it was very much still a side hustle. So that was different. That was like a traditional, but paternal leave was not necessarily, not the company. The company was fine with paternity leave, but the people I worked with, like there was... I was with Wheeze and he's old school and he's, you know, and dudes don't take paternity leave kind of culture is what I was around. And so I did take like a week off. And when I came back, I was made fun of for taking a week off of paternity leave. A week off, yes. And that was kind of that. Like, I was just.
Poor wife at home.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
That's rough.
The more recent though, Georgie, who's 9 months old, that was a very different world because I've got a business, I've got employees, like everything is kind of, a lot is relying on me performing. Mm-hmm. And so there was a lot of talk before he was born about what was going to happen when he was born. And he was due the week of Thanksgiving. And so I was like, well, if we get lucky and he's on his due date, then I probably can get away with taking a few days off around Thanksgiving because we shut down on Thanksgiving and the day after Thanksgiving. So if we get lucky, and of course, he's born the day after Thanksgiving, which is Friday. And so like on Saturday, we're in the hospital. It's already coming up. So like, when are you going back to work? And I'm like, Monday? She's like, no, wrong answer.
You know, yeah.
Like, Tuesday. So we ended up, it's not really a compromise because it was bad. Like, it's just bad husbanding. But I ended up, you mentioned early mornings. So I ended up basically agreeing to stay home until like 9 a.m. every day. And because I was good at waking up in the morning, I would wake up and I would just work at the house. Like, I would do the laundry, I would do the dishes, I would make the meals, and the baby would, if he woke up at all during that time, I would have the baby. And then my 6-year-old would wake up and he'd be with me and I'd make him breakfast and get him on the bus and stuff. And so it was like a 4 hours of basically I like worked at home, basically what she does all the time, I was doing for just a few hours. And just setting her up to A, sleep in, and then B, not really have to worry about food or laundry or anything.
That's
for the
huge,
rest of the
yeah.
day.
That seems like a decent compromise. How did that go?
I'm glad you said that because I felt like it was a decent compromise, but just the fact that then I would leave for 8 hours was like,
yeah,
man.
Were you right on duty as soon as you walked in the door when you got home then?
Yeah, I was. But this is another, like, this is maybe a place where I'm not, also have not been a good person before. And this is some therapy shit that we taught, that I have to talk about in therapy and have talked about in therapy, is that when I do get home, I've been through a long day. I'm very stressed out. I'm at my wit's end already when I get home. And so is she, right? And so we're meeting each other at our wit's end. And if there is, we have a great relationship mostly, but if there's one toxic part of our relationship, is that we have both been guilty of meeting each other at the end of the day and going, well, I've had a hard day, and not realizing, well, so has the other person.
Mm-hmm.
We've not been good at recognizing it, and there's been a couple.
It's hard, yeah, for it to not feel like a competition too. Like, I had all these bad things happen. It was hard in this way, and
yeah.
I had a hard day too. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's toxic is the only really way to put it, because, and we've talked about it, we've worked on it. We're way better at it. Does not happen that often anymore, but it still rears its head every once in a while. If I have a particularly tough day and I get home, and she had a particularly tough day on that same day, like, we can definitely butt heads over what's going to happen for the next few hours. And that's
tough. It's tough, too. Like, I don't know what your support system is, but it's not like we just have people that we can hand the kid over and both take a break at the same time. Like, someone always has to be on in our household.
Yeah, exactly. And now with two's a whole different ball game. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, there is no, and I used to come here on weekends a lot too.
Mm.
With one child, that was a little bit easier, and sometimes even welcomed, because she would go to her mom's house and stuff. But then now with two kids, I can't come here on weekends mm-hmm. anymore. So I really have to squeeze a lot into a little, and mm-hmm. yeah.
So what is this chapter of fatherhood looking like for you now with a 6-year-old and a 9-month-old?
I'm having a ton of fun with the 6-year-old. Like, we just, over the weekend, we went to Fringe Festival. We went to Costco.
Nice.
We go to the movies. We went to Bounce Hopper. We went to McDonald's for lunch. It was like the freaking best. We're like friends. Like, we have the same interests.
Little buddy.
I'll tell you a secret about men. I don't know. Maybe your husband is mature, but like, I don't know if I've ever really truly matured beyond about 14 years old. Like, the things I wanted to do when I was 14, I just want to stay up all night playing video games, eating pizza, and like drinking Mountain Dew. I kind of still want to do that at 42.
I feel like a lot of millennials are healing their trauma by doing what they wanted to do at 14. So
yeah.
Go for it.
Yeah, yeah.
Moderation, but.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm with him, like, it's so much fun. We are on the same page. The 9-month-old is adorable. You know, he's a baby, so we're not going to Costco and McDonald's. But when I get home, like, there is nothing better than when I walk in, he hears my voice, and he just, like, starts looking around for me. And when he catches my eyes, and then he just puts this big smile on his face. And I'm just like, yeah, goo, hey, goo. And he just goes, and he starts, like, bouncing, like, he's
so,
so excited.
Cute.
Oh, my God. It's the best. It's the best. It's great. When Leo was his age, when my 6-year-old was just still a baby, I was waiting for, when is my time going to come? And I'm like, what? This is falling a lot on her. And there's some of this stuff I can't do. I mean, I literally physically cannot breastfeed. Like, there's just some shit I can't do. So what can I do? And now it feels better. Now mm-hmm. it feels like I'm carrying my weight more.
Breastfeeding didn't work out for us, and I'm like so glad it didn't, because I feel like we could be a lot more equitable from the start, since we could both do bottles of formula and like be pretty equally bonded with him. And that was really nice.
You know how pissed you would have been if it was just like on you every single time?
It's a lot.
Yeah. Oh, my wife was pissed. But what can you do? I couldn't fix it. I was like, why don't you pump and then I'll do it, like, but she didn't want to. She's like, no, I want
pumping. Sucks.
Oh, dude.
I remember taking a Zoom breastfeeding class from URMC, and I got off the call and just started sobbing, and Tim was like, what's wrong? And I was like, what do you mean I had to grow him for 9 months?
Uh-huh.
Now I'm going to have to push him out of my body in a traumatic way.
Uh-huh.
And then they want me to feed him with my body for 2 years?
Yeah. Yeah.
And he was like, well, you don't have to do 2 years. You could do 1 year. And I was like, I can't do it.
It is traumatic. And did they come, did the consultant come see you in the hospital?
Oh, yeah. We saw like 6 lactation consultants in the first week. It was crazy.
And like, they make it so they're like, will you be breastfeeding? And I feel like if you say no, they'll shame you.
Yeah, I kind of get that vibe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
I had like
fair.
Women like massaging my boobs for me, and like little spoons up against them, and just like all that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, I can't even think right now.
No, yeah. Yeah. It's like, I cannot imagine. I can't empathize with this, but I can sympathize a bit with the fact that I do remember when it was hard for Ryan that she just felt like it was her fault. She felt totally. Like she's doing something
It feels
wrong.
Personal. Yeah. It feels I think personal. The hormones don't help either.
Yeah.
It's rough.
It's a lot, as they say.
Yes. I'm curious, like, what assumptions people make about you as a dad and which ones are true.
I don't know. I mean, I really don't know. I don't know what people are thinking, but I've come to another therapy thing is I've come to the realization that like nobody's really thinking about me. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we all think like, what do people think about me? But like the truth is that people don't think about me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't think people think about me. One thing that is, it's not exactly an answer to your question, but one thing that I feel like fits really well on this podcast and I just want to say out loud because I don't get to say it enough is that I get way too much credit. And in public, there's a lot of times, and this might sound overly traditional and I'm sorry if it does, but there's a lot of times in public when people will come up and want to talk to me. And meanwhile, there's my wife and sometimes our kids, sometimes not our kids. And they'll just be like, oh, you've been so successful. Oh, and they're saying the nicest things, but they're ignoring the fact that like she actually is busier than I am and is the only reason I've been successful. Mm. Because without her, if I had to be home with the kid, I'd be fucked. Like there's no way, this wouldn't exist. I would never been able to do this. Mm-hmm. You know, like what would I have done? It's impossible. And just doesn't get any credit for that. So it's not exactly what you were asking, mm-hmm. but like, and I don't know. I don't feel like I don't know how to handle that when it happens in real life. What should I do in that moment?
Do you give her credit like you are right now?
Sometimes, yeah. You know, like if there's room for it, I definitely do. Other times it's quick, it's in passing, it's walking through a restaurant or something. But like sometimes I try to as often as I can, but there's times that I don't.
Well, I feel like hyping her up is probably one of the best things you can do and being honest about it because so much of that work is invisible and we make a lot of assumptions and actually giving women the credit for that. And same for stay-at-home dads too because people just assume usually it's the mom doing all the work and staying home, but sometimes it's not.
She's also really good at, you know, the decision making around here.
Yeah.
This is probably bad, but like people don't realize how often a big decision around here might get mm-hmm. made at the dinner table.
Yeah.
At home, me talking to her and her kind of really just helping me see it more clearly.
It's so helpful to have a sounding board like that.
Yeah. And she can tell, she knows me, she mm-hmm. knows what I really think about something. Mm-hmm. She knows when I'm bullshitting and when I'm being like, but you know, the right thing to do is this. And she's like, no, it's not. And you don't think that either. And
wow.
I'm like, wow, you're right.
That's amazing to have her call you out on that too.
Well, like we were just looking at this. I might have to be a little careful about being detailed about this, mm-hmm. but we were just looking at hiring somebody. And I was saying that I thought it was a good idea. And she was just like sniffing bullshit on it. Hmm. She was just like, it doesn't seem like you do. And I would be like, well, there was this one thing. But they have A, B, and C.
Uh-huh.
And she's just like, but the one thing is a big red flag.
Yeah.
And it should tell you you don't want that person on your team. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. She's making big decisions about this place. She's just very appreciative. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to say that on the record.
Shout out to her.
Yeah.
I know you've talked a little bit about your anxiety before. I'm curious how that comes up as a dad. Are there certain things that make you really anxious as a parent?
Well, yeah. First of all, I am constantly afraid that I'm going to like hurt them or something. Like just giving a bath, like I give bath most nights and my 9-month-old is still in like the little bathtub, mm-hmm. but he's starting to like want to climb out of it. But like even in just that split second where I'm like grabbing the soap or grabbing the towel, like what if he like falls out of the thing? Like I'm like just scared shitless of screwing something up like that. I mean, they're pretty versatile. They can take some bumps. They've both taken some bumps. Mm-hmm. Like they both have taken a couple spills where I'm like, ooh, and then they get up laughing and I'm like,
yeah, oh, yeah. God. We're in like the, oh my God era. Like, oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. What is he doing? What is he doing now?
Yes. The 9-month-old like is crawling and once in a while he just face plants and I'm like, oh no. Oh no.
And then once they're teething and then if they face plant and their teeth go into the lip. Oh
yeah. Yeah, exactly. Brutal. Yeah. With the 6-year-old, it's a little bit of like the anxiety manifests itself with like I curse in front of him and I've done that a lot and I'm going oof, and like then he curses and I'm like ugh. But I'm not all that worried about curse words. This is a weird offshoot, but like I am so pissed off about the fact that you can show somebody getting shot on television but you can't say the word shit on mm-hmm. television. Like to me that's backwards. Mm-hmm. Shouldn't saying oh shit be fine and shooting someone in the head on regular TV should probably not be shown. I mean, I'm not talking about like they won't maybe show real shootings, but the TV shows do. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of violence on TV. And anyway, that was a weird aside.
We were watching Thomas the Tank Engine during snack time the other day, and an ad came on, and I don't have YouTube Kids set up yet, and it was like some really violent TV show with all these guns blaring, and I was like, great, cool. Yeah. Now my kid's seeing this.
Yeah, actually, I was watching, he was reading or playing with the toys or something in the middle of the living room, and I started watching a show that I didn't think had any violence in it, and the very first scene was violent, and it was one of those things where it happens so fast, where they're talking and then the guy just pulls out a gun and shoots him, and as soon as that happens, I'm like, oh shit, and I'm like reaching for the remote, and I look to see, like, did he see that? And he's just staring at the TV with his eyes wide open. And this is kind of funny though, because this is like a year ago, it's pretty recent. He sees that I'm panicked, my wife's upstairs. Now he's fucking with me, because then he goes, I'm telling mommy. And he just like runs upstairs.
He doesn't even know what he's telling her.
He's just like, there was a man that shot a man on TV. And she's just like, Paul!
Oops.
So the anxiety manifests itself. What am I going to screw up? Like we said earlier, like, what's the thing he's going to be in therapy? Mm-hmm. What's the black cloud? What am I doing to him right now that is going to be his black cloud?
I keep hearing that like rushing can instill anxiety in kids. And I'm always like, oh, this morning we went out for coffee with a friend and their baby. And we were like rushing all over the house to get ready. And my son kept bringing me books to read. And I kept being like, oh, hang on, we got to do this. We got to do that. We got to get ready. And I was like, I should have just sat down and read him the book. But we had to get out the door by a certain time. Like, it's hard to balance the like, I am an adult and I am a parent. And we have to be at a place by a certain time. But also like, I don't want to not engage with you because we're in such a hurry.
Yeah, it's a lot, as they say. It's a lot, like, and a lot sometimes it contradicts itself too. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I don't know, in a hurry, but is it good also to like teach your kid
something fun and enriching and enjoyable?
Yeah, I agree.
He's in his era of like bringing us a dozen books and doing the toddler plop in the lap, which is so nice. And now he'll get up before the story's over and get another story in queue so that you can't leave because he's got more ready. It's really cute.
They scheme too. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, he's getting into that scheming era.
And then you also, you feel like guilt about, should you just never stop reading? Like, if your kid wants to read 12 books, like...
Yeah, like, that's great.
It's great.
But also...
At some point...
Getting tired of some of these.
Yeah, like, at some point...
I can recite so many of them by heart now. Yeah, it's wild.
Yeah. I get it. We're on to chapter books.
Oh, fun.
For Leo, for the older one. And we did Captain Underpants. Now we're on to Dog Man.
Nice.
And that's our thing. Every night we read a few chapters.
Oh, that sounds like a good time.
Yeah. And then every time we finish one, we buy a new one. We're book nice people.
So I'm curious about the era in between Leo and Georgie. I know you told me a little bit about infertility struggles. Can you talk a little bit about what that experience was like?
So one of the things that made me just fall in love with my wife right away was we talked about kids on like our second date, and we were both gung-ho. We want to have kids. And I just saw it for years before she was a mom. Like, this is going to be the best mom ever. She's like made for this. Like, she wants nothing more than to be a mom. She is just the perfect mom. She's going to be. And so the beginning of the story sounds very happy because we get married and we decide, let's have a kid. And we start trying and we just immediately get pregnant. Like the second time we even tried, we were ready for it to maybe take a while. We were like, well, it can take months. We'll have to download the ovulation schedule. And it just immediately we got pregnant. And so that's Leo, and Leo's born, and we get cocky, you know, and we're like, okay, so we'll plan out our second. We're going to do it in March so that the baby's born around Christmas, and so we'll start trying in March because obviously it's going to be instant again.
Perfectly.
It'll just be perfect. Yeah, we just have it all planned out. And then you can probably already tell how this goes, but it doesn't. Mm-hmm. And then it doesn't. And then it doesn't. Month after month after month, it just doesn't. And then it's that thing that you always hear couples talk about, how now it's not even fun anymore. Mm-hmm. Now it's a chore. Now it's like it's on the calendar. It has to happen. Mm-hmm. Everyone's tired. It's almost like you're like having sex pissed off because you're kind of like, well, we have to, you know, and it sucks. That really sucks. Mm-hmm. It takes everything that's important out of it, and it just becomes, and then the pressure starts.
Yeah.
Now you're getting towards a year, and it's like, well, it has to work this time, right? It has to work this time. And it just doesn't. And it doesn't. And we get well over a year. And once you get over a year, you can be diagnosed with infertility. So we go to get diagnosed with infertility, and we get diagnosed with something so frustrating called unknown infertility. Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. Unknown infertility, which means like my test came back fine, her test came back fine. It's just not clicking. It's just not happening. And it was so frustrating. So a few more months go by, and then it happens. Finally. I don't remember exactly. It's like a year and a half of trying. It's a long time. It's a year and a half of trying, and it finally happens. And it's this huge sigh of relief of like, oh my God, finally. And also, like, we had already started talking about what the options were going to be. IVF is not cheap. We're going, oh my God, if we have to go down that road, like, what's that going to mean? Are we going to have to go into debt over that? Like, how much is that going to be? Like, oh God. So we get pregnant, and something really that, like, I remember from the first pregnancy was that my wife at the OBGYN asked the doctor, when can I stop? This is like first trimester. Mm-hmm. Like, when do I stop worrying about potentially miscarrying, or when do I stop worrying about my child, or something like that? Mm-hmm. And the doctor said, if you're asking me when you can stop worrying about your child, the answer is never. Mm-hmm. And then she told a story about, she's like, my son is 32 and works at a winery, and I think about him, I worry about him every mm-hmm. day, you know, like, so kind of put her in that place. But then she went into how it's like, well, statistically after the first trimester, uh-huh. it gets a little bit less. So with our second child, we're kind of eyeing the end of the first trimester, and that's also, it's probably very well known, but I didn't really understand, but it's why a lot of times people don't announce they're pregnant until mm-hmm. about 3 months in. It's because there is risk early on.
I always like have chafed at that a little bit. Like, I told a lot of friends before we reached the end of the first trimester, just because yeah. I figured even if something happened, I would want people to know and have their support instead of have to go through it alone.
That's good thinking. And to tell you the truth, with Leo, we did. We were mm-hmm. kind of like close to the vest. With our second child, we were just so happy yeah. that we started telling everybody. Yeah. The problem is that we got to the end of the first trimester. We were like a week out. And this one I've never told anybody. So I went to every appointment with Leo. Mm-hmm. Every single appointment. I never missed anything. And then with the second pregnancy, I went to all the appointments. I skipped the last appointment. Mm. This was the only one I didn't go to. It was just a routine ultrasound. Just a routine ultrasound. It was at like 3 o'clock or something. She would definitely call me. I kind of forgot it was even happening. It was so just like routine, you know? 4 o'clock, 4:30, 5 o'clock. I still haven't heard from her. So finally at like 5 o'clock, I call her, and I don't know what it is. In the back of my head, I had a bad feeling, and I called her. And she's just, and I'm just like, what the fuck? And so I just pulled in my driveway. I'm sitting in my garage, and she just starts telling me the whole story of everything that has happened in the last couple hours. And I wasn't there. And it's awful. It's awful I wasn't there. And so we lost a baby. And it was the darkest time, the worst time. We had to go in like that night, and like, it's so emotionally dark, but there's also an actual physical part of it mm-hmm. that has to happen, which is fucking terrible. It's yeah. just terrible. And so she has to go through that, and it's such a bad thing for a man to be like, oh, poor me. But like, you're just fucking helpless. You're just helpless. This is like the love of your life. You know, it's your wife, it's your child, and you can't do anything about it. You're just helpless. It's just terrible. And I wasn't even there for the appointment.
And where was Leo in all this? Was he like home when she was crying?
We just left him in the car the whole time. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. Sorry. No, the reason I hadn't heard from her is because like she had to pick him up from where he was, and then she just like brought him to her mom's house and just like left. Just was like, I don't know when I'll be back. Like, I need to go, and like call me. We needed, you know, something like that. I don't remember exactly, to tell you the truth, but it was basically like my in-laws just stepped in and were like, we got him. And then it was just the darkest night that turned into the next day, and then the next day, and then the next day. And it was months of just really sad times, you know, like it took a while till you like laughed again. And then also I didn't know, like, do I tell people in my day-to-day life or not? And like, you know, I was, eventually I'm going back to work after a few days. And I did have to tell a couple of people because I just wasn't going to come to work for a few days. Mm-hmm. Just like, I'm just not going to be there for a little while. So I need you guys to take over. And the business was still young and fragile at that time. So I had to tell a couple people what was going on and why I was just going to be out of touch for a couple of days. And it was hard. It was so hard. And you know, like a few months go by and like, it gets just a little bit easier. And then like another month goes by, it gets just a little bit easier. But still, it's still, thinking back on that, it's still not easy. It's just some time has helped heal it. And then also, of course, we do end up getting pregnant with Georgie, which mm-hmm. we'll still come back to that. But so that has helped quite a bit. So we planted a tree in our front yard. And like that tree is our, we remember with that tree.
That's a nice way to commemorate.
But so we're back to square one and we still want to get pregnant. And oh my God, like the trauma. And yeah. Now, so we decide we're done fucking around. We're going to go through the process. So we go IUI or strikes, you're out. And so now it's only got to be IVF. And we're like, geez. So we go to the IVF and that's a whole thing. There's like, she's like, there's shots involved. Like, and mm-hmm. I'm giving her shots too. And nobody teaches you how to give a shot. They just send you home with the stuff. And they're like, yeah, give shots. And you know, Dario's got such a great joke about, the one time I've talked about IVF was when he was on. And he's got such a great joke about like going on vacation with his wife when they were doing IVF and having all the needles in the hotel room and how the people who like turn over the room were probably like, look at these fucking junkies. But it is like my son Leo would come into our room and I would be like giving my wife a shot in the ass. Like, there was some parts of it that were a little bit funny, but eventually we go through with IVF and we do get pregnant on the first try with IVF, which was great.
Wow.
And that's Georgie. So I'm sorry that was kind of a long story.
No, but I feel like it's important to talk about because I feel like only in the last few years have people started to talk about it more. And yeah. Often it's women and not the dads who are talking about the experience too.
Yeah.
Like, how do you think it was different for you and your wife going through that? Like, was there anything you could do to support her through it? Or you were both just so low you had to get through it with time? Or
so we were both really low, but I tried to pretend as often as I could that I wasn't. You know, mm-hmm. I would make dinner and mm-hmm. kind of try to bring like some energy to the dinner and try to talk about other things, you know. And like, so I don't know. I didn't grieve for a while. It took me a little while. Mm-hmm. At first, I kind of went into like protector mode and I'm like,
yeah,
she's going to grieve. This is her turn to grieve. My job is to make sure that she doesn't have to worry about anything else while she grieves. Mm-hmm. And then I'll grieve later.
Yeah.
So that was maybe how I went about it. As far as telling people, like we did tell some people. And I mean, we were both amazed at how many people, how often we would hear, oh, I went through that as well.
Yeah.
It was very frequent. I don't know exactly what the statistics are on miscarriage, but
it's like 1 in 8 or something.
It's enough that
I'll fact check myself and put it in the show notes.
But it's enough that, you know, if you're in a group of people and you say it, probably somebody in that group has gone through the same thing. So
even just like struggling to conceive, like when we finally decided to start trying, I was like, oh, yeah, we're going to have a baby. It's going to be so fast, you know? And it took us almost a year to get pregnant. We were right on the cusp of that, like infertility starting to investigate thing. And everyone around us is getting pregnant. Yes. It felt like you're just surrounded. And it's like, everyone has such an easy time but me. And
yes.
And then I can only imagine how much worse that felt when it was so drawn out too. Oh,
and let's tie it back to social media for a second too.
Yeah.
Like the pregnancy announcements. Yeah. I mean, there was a period of time there where my wife, like she would just throw her phone down and I'd be like, what's wrong? And she'd be like, fucking Rachel. Like, you know, I'd be like, by the way, if Rachel Pulvino's listening to this, I'm not talking about you, not you. I just
That's
picked
who
any
I
name.
Immediately thought of, I just, oddly enough.
I just picked any name off the top of my head. But, you know, my wife would just like, she would see a pregnancy announcement and she would. And so we have a friend who went through infertility who posts things often about like being sensitive to the fact that mm-hmm. perhaps, you know, other people are struggling. So don't like gloat about
it. We decided not to do any kind of pregnancy announcement and just hard launch it, I said.
Oh, yeah.
So it was like a week after he was born, we were like, we got a kid now. And people were like, wait, what?
That's great. I love that.
There's so much like cringy pregnancy content. And I try to keep my algorithm free of that for as long as I could. Like, I didn't even Google anything pregnancy related. In regular Google, I would always go in incognito mode so I wouldn't get targeted ads. Because I was like, if I lose the baby, I don't want to be getting ads for baby stuff all that time.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
The internet is just like a brutal place to be.
I think that was happening to my wife. I think she was getting fed all of it. Oh,
it's rough.
It was so rough. It was. It's still. So we did the same thing. Like our first pregnancy was just very stereotypical. Like pregnancy announcement, ultrasound picture, look at the baby bump. And the second one, nothing. We didn't post a thing about our second one. Or third, I should say third mm-hmm. one. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like we didn't, not a thing.
So that was a long and hard road, it sounds like. What are some of the harder parts of being a dad now? Like, what's the really overwhelming part of it?
Frankly, time. Mm-hmm. It's just time. It's just, I'm very invested here at this business and trying to make it work. And so it takes a lot out of me. And that's also a full-time job. So it's just, I feel some guilt about, like, you know, not always being around. Like, should I be around more? Like, yesterday I was out of the house at 5 a.m. I was out of the house yesterday at 5 a.m. I was home at 8:15 p.m. That sucks. That sucks. It's a lot. It's a lot. It sucks. But like one thing I wanted to talk to you about, because I really think it's great that you give people space to talk about how hard it can be, mm-hmm. and it could be anything, is as much as, yes, it's hard and it's a lot, I also don't know if this building exists if I didn't do that. Because there is some parts of hustle culture that are really just people look at, they hate it. Like now, that's one good thing about Gen Z is they just hate hustle culture. They're like, where's your work-life balance? What do you mean you worked a 16-hour day? Like that's the worst thing you can ever hear. But I don't know how this would exist without some 16-hour days. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Am I asking you? I don't know. Like, what do you think? Like,
do you think it'll ever change and get better? Like you'll...
I think
stabilize and not have to work those long days in the future.
It has for sure. Yeah. As I've gotten to add staff and add automation, like it's definitely, my work weeks now are probably 50 to 60 hours,
mm-hmm.
but they were closing in on 80 hours very regularly for a couple of years.
That's intense.
Oh, wow. Yeah. But again, I just don't know if it gets over the hump without that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know.
I think I also try to think of it as like seasons. Like it's just a season of life. It's going to be short term. Like you can't do that for 10 years straight. You're going to burnout. You'll have stress impacting your health. Like it's not sustainable. But
speaking of TikTok, I follow like career coaches and stuff on TikTok, and there's one that says like you have to go through that stage, and you're think of it like you're building the foundation, but you have to go through that stage. But once you get through that stage, you've built this solid foundation. Mm-hmm. You did all that work early on. Now I can't come here on weekends anymore because my wife would kill me. You know, like if I was just like, all right, well, you've got both kids, I got to work all day on a Sunday. Like, I'm not getting away with that now. That's not going to happen, you know? But you know, years ago, like that had to happen. But the cool thing again about her deserving more credit is she knew that back then.
Mm-hmm.
She knew that. And our goal was for her to not have to work. And we got there. And mm-hmm. that was only because of some Sundays and some 16-hour days.
Right. I feel like I've been lucky that I am able to, like, at least before having kids, I worked 25 to 30 hours a week and got all my work done, which was amazing.
Yeah.
And now, like, I don't even know how to count it anymore because so much of it is stuff that's happening at night and then, like, my teaching. And I'm like, well, I don't count the teaching, but, like, it totally does count it as more time that I'm working.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, the podcast, like, is it work? Is it not work? You know, it's just, like, there are just no boundaries. It's all very blurred and so I think I don't work that much, but I'm like, I probably am working a lot more than I think. I'm not toxic hustle culture, but
hard to say. What are your thoughts on hustle culture? Like, I mean, you have a podcast called It's a Lot, so my assumption is that you have disdain for hustle culture. Is that
for the most part? Like I don't want to work 80 hour weeks, or I try to like have some degree of balance and time for my family and my hobbies and everything. And I'm not trying to like scale my business and sell it off or something. So I think that lets me be in that position. But
yeah, sometimes I feel guilt over what am I like? I'm like very driven to grow and scale. And like you say about selling it off, like I don't know. I mean, I'm not trying to sell a business, but also like, I'm not going to lie to you. If somebody came around and there was a big enough number out there, like, I mean, I wouldn't be able to get the key off the keychain fast enough. I'd be like,
and then you'd probably start another business a year later.
probably. What was I just listening to? Somebody who I love How I Built This, the podcast, How I Built This. And somebody was talking about like on the very first day that their non-compete was up, they started right back up.
It's aggressive.
Yeah, it was on the very first.
Take a break.
Exactly. I don't know. I feel guilty because, like, I don't know if you're allowed, if it's like socially acceptable to say that you're interested in making money.
Mm-hmm.
But I am. And I don't know if that's okay or not. I don't know. Is that okay?
It's weird because we're so like capitalist and hustle culture-y, productivity culture, grind culture, but it's like everyone's hustling, but you can't say that you're hustling because you want to make money. Like, it's just a weird, like, why would we stigmatize that? And it's so taboo to talk about money.
It is.
And yeah. I try to be like more open about it when I can. And someone else I had on my show talked very openly about like the brand deals she gets with sponsored content, her goals for her income stream, and like how she wants to retire by 40 and all this stuff. And yeah. I'm like, hell yeah, like put it out there. Go for yeah. it. You know,
yeah.
it can only help other people.
It is
and
taboo.
I think she will say like, she said, I got my first $20,000 brand deal for posting on LinkedIn. She's a LinkedIn influencer.
Nice.
And people were all like thrilled for her. No one was like, oh, you're so selfish. You're so yeah. greedy. Like it, yeah. people were like, get that bag, girl. Like,
yeah. yeah. I've been very self-conscious about it. So we started as like farmers markets and festivals and stuff. And we were like the local small scale food brand. And now like I get jealous because like there's a lot of local food brands like launching through the commissary or at local yeah. farmers markets where I'm like, oh cool, we're the same, and they're like, fuck you, we're not the same, you've got a factory, you're way, and I'm uh-huh. like, yeah, but I started a farmers market
yeah.
and I'm thinking like, oh, but doesn't that make you like me? And instead they're like, no. Yeah, that, in fairness, nobody yeah, yeah. has actually said that. This is me, like, I'm projecting. Like, these are my worst nightmares.
You're in a different chapter.
This is my anxiety speaking. I don't know. Sometimes I feel like, oh, no, have I jumped the shark? Like, are we still the cute little local pasta sauce brand? I don't know.
I don't think you jumped the shark. You only jumped the shark if you did a mountain lion post in your canning factory.
Oh, I had one ready to go. And then at the last minute, I go, I can't want to post
too
this.
Much.
Yeah, I was like, everyone else is doing it.
Yeah.
I don't want to do it.
Well, we should probably wrap up our lengthy conversation, but I do have one more question for you. What do you really love about being a dad? What brings you joy?
The smile, when they're happy, the smile gets me in trouble too, because I like say yes to things I probably shouldn't. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm always, I like, I'm such a sucker for like buying a toy at TJ mm-hmm. Maxx. It's like $5.
Oh yeah.
And it just makes them so damn happy, but I'm totally spoiling them, you know?
And that's why you make money with your factory.
That's true. That's
there
true.
There you go, to enable your child.
That's true. But like we went to TJ Maxx on Saturday and
the store is dangerous.
There's like a Sonic the Hedgehog go-kart and it's $4.99. Daddy, can I have it? Like, my wife is way better at being like, we don't need that right now. He doesn't need another toy. And I'm just like, I just want that dopamine hit of him being like, yes. And I'm like, let's get it. And he's just like, yes, yes. And I'm just like, oh, that's why I live for that moment
yeah.
of just like making them happy.
That's
and
awesome. Then,
and like on a more sort of just like primitive level, this is just sounds so fucking weird, but I'm just so proud of like the fact that he has dinner every night. Putting food on the table.
Do you get to do much cooking these days?
I do. Yeah, I do. Actually, decent amount of it. Like I'm already looking at the clock right now and I'm being like, oh shit, if I'm going to make dinner tonight, I got to hurry up. The old adage is like putting food on the table, but there is something about putting food on the table that I just really enjoy. Mm-hmm. Like I love when we sit down to dinner and my kids have zero worry about whether or not they're going to have dinner tonight. Mm-hmm. Like it doesn't even occur to them that they might not have dinner tonight. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't. That's the most absurd thing in the world. What do you mean? Like, of course we're having dinner tonight. I am so proud of that. I am like so proud of just watching them just... both of them just eat, and that is so weird, but like there's something about it makes me proud. And then from the baby, from Georgie, it's that thing I told you about. It's when I get home and he just like his whole body starts, he's like, because he sees me, like that's
really sweet.
Oh my god, like that's amazing.
My
like,
son still sleeps in our room, and when he wakes up in the morning, he like pops up in his crib and he's like, ah, and big smile, he like waves over and I'm like, what?
Yeah.
But he's so happy to see us like any time of day.
Yes, we're his best friends.
Yeah, yeah, it's the
and
cutest.
Like that won't last forever.
Yeah.
And oh, I just want to soak up every bit of it. But mm-hmm. you know where I'm like a bad like millennial parent though is the innocence that he has. Like I just want to preserve the innocence. Mm. So, but you can't preserve innocence forever. At some point, you have to let your kid experience some hardship or they just won't be able to experience mm-hmm. hardship. And I'm having a hard time with that. I'm yeah. having a hard time with like, if the kid isn't nice to him at school, my wife and my inclination, like our raw emotion is like, we'll fix it. But then both of us are like, no, no.
It's so interesting. Like we've been going to like local libraries to play in the play areas and stuff and just seeing all the other millennial parents doing their own versions of gentle parenting. Like my kid was the youngest one there the other day, and all the other parents are like, share, you have to share, be nice to the baby. And like one mom like took her kid away after he didn't share for like 2 seconds, and I'm like, okay, it's fine. Like my kid can tolerate the distress of your kid not wanting to share a truck. It is fine. Like I'm very chill about it. But everyone's like doing the most.
If my kid is rude to another kid, I am freaking like embarrassed. I am so embarrassed. But like when another kid is rude to my kid, I really, I'm like,
they'll figure it out. They're kids.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, exactly. So I wonder if ever, if we all feel that way. I don't know. There's, some of the moms scare me at the, some of them I do think if my kid is rude to their kid that they're going to come for me. So like,
Yeah. Like I never know when to intervene. It's just like, I'll let them figure it out or let the other parent step in. I'm just going to hang out over here.
There was a time where my kid was shooting. He had a squirt. I was going to say squirt gun. I think we call them squirters now. We don't say squirt gun anymore. But he had squirter, and he was just squirting this other kid in the backyard. And this kid didn't like it. And I'm kind of going like, Leo, please stop. Like, he doesn't want you to hit. And my kid's just being a jerk. Like, he's just keeps squirting this kid. And the kid finally turns around, throws a water balloon, and hits my kid right in the face. Emily, I was like happy. I was like, good. He needed that.
I think it's called fuck around, find out parenting.
Yeah.
Natural consequences.
Yes. But I was like rooting for that kid to like, knock my kid down a peg. Yeah,
that's too funny.
The dad was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I was like, no, that was the best.
All good.
You needed that, yeah.
Well, I think that's a perfect note to end on. Thank you for chatting with me for It's a Lot. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. We did a super episode. We did an hour. We did an hour and a half.
Oops.
Is that okay? You good?
Yeah.
Not editing anything. This is great.
This has been a presentation of the Lunch Hour Podcast Network.